Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.
Today we're talking with Eric Hanship. Eric is a professional developer, author, blogger, YouTuber, husband, and father. He enjoys working with Ember.js, Vue.js, and is a JavaScript superfan. Welcome, Eric.
Hey guys, how's it going?
Going good.
So, Eric, why don't you just kind of tell us about yourself, maybe a little bit how you got started in the industry?
Yeah, absolutely. So, my name's, of course, Eric. Like you said, I'm from Reno, Nevada. I've been a software developer for over 10 years now. I'm actually working mostly in web development right now. I started really back in high school, and then in college, I got a computer science degree. And I went into, I took a little bit of an unusual path, probably like many of your listeners. I didn't go straight into development. I actually did something called home automation. I helped put together like HVAC systems, lighting systems. We use these embedded controllers to do programming on. And then I jumped to doing QA for a couple of years. And then I went to doing development, working on a Java system. And actually, the first system I worked at this company, they actually had this really old legacy code base that was written in the 1980s using something called TransBASIC. And it had literally been ported from a PDP 11 to a few systems, and it was running on an AIX system with a DB2 database. And I had become like the maintainer of that system at this company. So that was like one of my first big development roles. So I was, this system had a mishmash between TransBASIC, and we're talking BASIC with go-tos and subroutines, that type of code. It had some of that, some Java, some Python, some C++. It was all kind of a mismatch. So I was the junior developer at the time that had to maintain that system for a few years. That was fun. It was a good learning experience. Developing, working on such old code and looking at comments literally from like the early 90s and 80s and trying to decipher like why this spaghetti code was running.
So you made the mistake of touching it once and then it became yours.
Pretty much. So yeah, I was doing QA at this organization, and I wanted to get into just doing development because that's kind of my passion. And they're like, hey, we have this old system. We need someone to maintain it. Kind of the old programmers have left. Would you be interested? I'm like, sure. And then next thing I know, I own it for years. So I had done that for a few years, probably more than a few years. And then I kind of transitioned over to their new Java system that had all the bells and whistles. We had an application server. It's a little bit more modern technology. And I got a little bit bored in that role. And so I went back to school and decided to get my MBA, which might be a little bit different for a developer, but I thought, no, I like technology, but I also like the business aspects of things. So I went back to school and I took a personal development branding class of all things. And inside that class, I had to create a blog. And I had created a blog years ago, like I'm talking about like early 2000s, where I was talking about development and I hadn't touched it in years. So I kind of brushed off my blogging skills, and I was doing mostly back-end development, like I said, that old legacy system in Java. And I thought, you know, I really want to get into web development. That's what I used to do for years in high school and a little bit of college, but I hadn't done it for a while. I was looking at single-page application framework, SPAs. And at the time, I think AngularJS was pretty popular. Backbone was still popular. And then people would always say, you know, if you could hear people talk about SPAs, usually you hear Angular, React. And before that, it was Angular, Backbone, and Ember.js. So this is when Ember.js was still being talked about when people talked about SPAs. Right now, everybody talks about Angular, React, and Vue. Vue is kind of taking that third place spot. But so I really was interested in Ember, so I decided to deep dive into it. I started, for this personal branding class, writing all these blog articles and having fun with that, tweeting out my articles, and I got picked up by a publisher, just kind of randomly saw some of the work I was doing in Ember on this blog, and I wrote my first book out of it. I got a book deal out of it, which was really cool, from Pack Publishing. And then when the class ended, the final project for the class was to do a YouTube video. And I was like super scared. Like, I don't know if I could do this. So I just kind of, I remember it was like a 5-minute video. It took me 2 hours. I did like 100 cuts of it, but I got it done. And then I kind of just fell in love with doing YouTube. And I started blogging less because blogging was taking hours and hours to write a good blog. If you guys, I'm sure some of you guys have done it here. So I'm like, I can bust out a cool like 10-minute tutorial on Ember, on this little feature in Ember, in, you know, half hour, get it edited, upload to YouTube. And the same thing would take me like 3 hours doing a blog. So I kind of got into doing YouTube. And then I graduated my MBA, and I kind of changed jobs a few times and started doing web development full time. And then I started doing Vue tutorials online on my YouTube page. And once again, just randomly got picked up by a publisher, Manning this time, really liked the work I was doing and asked me to write a book on Vue. So I just really deep dived into the framework. I started getting really involved in the community, talking to some of the core team members, trying to understand everything about Vue. And then that comes to about today. By the time this is released, it should be out. It's in early access, and the physical hard copy should be out soon. That's a little bit about my process. One thing I like to do is, some people have this idea, especially when they're trying to get to be known as developer, I think there's this idiom or this saying that, you know, unless it's a hell yes, it's a no. And mine is the opposite. I'm like, I just say yes, especially when I started out, I was just saying yes to everything. I was saying, every time someone tweeted me on Twitter for help, I would like literally download their GitHub code and like go line by line and help them. Anytime someone left a comment on my blog or my YouTube, I'd help them. When I got approached for books, I did it. I was asked to like talk in front of a French Ember.js meetup. Actually, it was a JavaScript meetup in Paris over online at like 3 a.m. in the morning. I got up and did it. So I'm like I always think like when you're beginning, it's a good idea just to say yes to more than you can handle.
Nice.
Did you have to know any French for that?
Luckily, a lot of them spoke English.
And Clayton, was Ember one of the frameworks that you were looking into for a little while?
Early on, yeah. But none of the places that I was working at had anybody that knew what it was. So wasn't one of the ones I picked up.
Yeah, Ember is one of those ones that it's... I know you guys had the community manager for Aurelia on a few episodes ago. I listened to that episode. That was really great. And it's sort of the same type of community. You know, it's a small but tight-knit community. Ember development is continuing on. They have EmberConf every year, and you can see there's thousands of people that attend. There's, you know, lots and lots of companies still using Ember, and they were actually at the forefront of a lot of things. I think you could say that the Ember CLI influenced some of the other CLIs that were released afterwards.
Yeah, it directly influenced the Angular 2 and above CLI. Mm-hmm. They kind of copied Ember CLI for that.
Yep, exactly.
Good artist steal, so we're good. What has drawn you to JavaScript frameworks and libraries like Vue.js and Ember.js?
Well, definitely being in that environment where I'm kind of working on these legacy systems and working in the back end and these Java application servers, I just realized that there's so much more, and you can make the argument somewhat in the back end, but there's so much stuff happening in the front end. There's new technologies coming out every day. There's new frameworks. There's new best practices that you have to keep up with. And I just like the environment of web development in general. And I like the accessibility of it too. In other words, not accessibility as in that type of accessibility, but as in anybody can kind of jump in. You know, I always joke with my friends, I'm one of the few web developers out there that has a computer science degree and an MBA. It's pretty, I mean, I work with people that are 5-10 years younger than me that just did boot camps, or they came right out of high school. And that's what's kind of cool about it. You don't have to have a degree, and there's just the technology is moving really fast.
Yeah, it's very approachable. The barrier to entry is a little bit lower, I would think. And that isn't to diminish anyone or any profession. It's just hardcore computer science, heavy on the science, is very difficult and takes a lot of study and a lot of practice and the right type of industry to be involved in to put that to practice. But JavaScript developers can do something that looks cool, that's functional, then put it in front of people, in front of users, and get feedback really quickly. It's very difficult to get that feedback for a very heavy data science application, for instance.
Yeah, I mean, John, that's a good point. It's easy to get up and running. I mean, that's one thing I like about Vue in general, because they call it the progressive framework, because you can progressively add it to your existing projects. You can just put in a script tag with the Vue minified Vue code in there, or you can use Vue CLI, which allows us to create an application real quickly, like many of the other CLIs out there. It has some best practices pointed in there for you to get started. It does the transpiling for you. You can Vue CLI 3 is the latest one out there, and you can pick if you want TypeScript or if you don't want TypeScript. You can do what type of linting you want in there. You can pick which type of end-to-end test runner, like Cypress or Nightwatch. You can do Jest or Mocha Webpack for your testing. So yeah, it's really flexible. You can create a project pretty quickly with it. So that's probably one of the advantages of Vue, is that over the other frameworks, although this is very debatable, of course, but in some ways it's just really easy to get up and running. If you're familiar with AngularJS, Angular 1, the kind of it stole some of the parts of the directives in Vue.js compared to Angular 1. I think Evan Yu is the creator of Vue, and he said, let me see, he has a quote where he actually worked for Google for a while. And he said, I figured if I could extract the part that I really liked about Angular and build something really lightweight, Vue was originally... So he's basically extracting some parts of Angular 1 into Vue to make it kind of more lightweight and easier to use.
The three of us used to work together at a company in Louisville, Kentucky, and we all worked in AngularJS and Knockout and a few others. Around that time or shortly thereafter is when the Angular 2 release candidates 1 through 147 came out and breaking changes along the way. The good parts I've heard about Vue are that it is what Angular 2 should have been or could have been.
Yeah, I work a lot of Angular 5. We haven't upgraded Angular 6 yet. And, you know, one difference between the two is Vue recommends to use single file components. So your styles, your JavaScript, and your HTML templates are all in the same file, while Angular and Ember, for that matter, really breaks those up into different files. So there's definitely a difference in philosophy between the two.
So stepping back into some of your content production, blogging and YouTubing and podcasting and writing books, what is your process for developing content and deciding that this topic would make a good blog post, or this topic would be a good topic for, or good subject for a podcast episode or for a YouTube video? What's that process like for you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I do have a mailing list too. So I've taken some of the basics of digital marketing out there. The marketers out there all recommend creating an email list and being engaged with it and having opt-ins for people to get into your email list. And that helps you a couple of ways. One of which is I can pull that audience and ask them what they're interested in. And that's, in fact, that's one of the questions I ask anytime someone joins my email list. I give them some information and then I ask them after a little while, like, what are you guys working on? And so that kind of gives me some ideas of what videos and topics I need to work on just by asking them from those topics. So when I joined YouTube, and YouTube, we could have a whole conversation on YouTube and development channels. There's a whole ecosystem and a whole niche of developers that teach on YouTube. And there's all sorts of different types of teaching. There's some people that just give advice. They'll just do 10, 15 minutes, and they'll just talk in front of the camera about anything that's happening in the development world. And a lot of times, from what I've seen, a lot of them are junior developers. And they're more like talking about how to get into the industry and to become a programmer if you don't have any experience. And there's a lot of advice on boot camps and a lot of advice on how to be self-taught and the resources and things like that. Then there's also there's some developers that do actual tutorials online. They'll explain a concept. They'll either create a program or they'll show you exactly what to do each step by step, like a screencast. And then there's developers that are doing really like high-end sciencey, scientific AI stuff, AI videos like that. Usually, I mean, the quality is up and down. What I do is, to get back to your original question, I kind of look at, first, I ask my audience what they're interested in, and that kind of helps me come up with topics. Second, I also I'll admit I do steal a little bit. Sometimes I just look at what are people talking about online? What are people questioning? Maybe I'll go, if I see a lot of people are putting up the same type of videos, I'll sometimes make my video on that topic to explain it. And sometimes I just, whatever I'm working on at my work, I'll be like, well, I'm really working on authentication or ArcGIS or something. And then I'll put up a video on that. So it's kind of a combination of all three, and whatever comes to my head, I'll put out there and see how people react. My videos are a little bit of a combination of both, by the way. I do some tutorials, and then I do some kind of just talking advice videos. I don't do really any vlogging. You're not going to see me walking around eating a cheeseburger. Which, you'd be funny. There's developers on YouTube. That's what they do. That all they do is their developer life, and you see them go to Taco Bell and eat a sandwich, and they talk about writing code. Previously, they don't do any screencasts.
That's the big bucks. Once you make the big money, you can go to Taco Bell and get a...
Yeah, so you talked about being picked up to do the book. I think the first one was on Ember, and I forget who that was. Can we kind of dive into both experiences that you have had in kind of putting together those books?
Yeah, it was a really... Let me take a step back. They're writing a book is, it has to be kind of a labor of love, I guess you could say. I think you probably all, I don't know if you know or not, but people say that, and this is true, books are a lot of work and they don't pay a ton of money, but it definitely gives you some exposure, and it can be a lead in to other things you're doing. So when I got approached for Pact Publishing, which is a good publisher. It's not, you know, it's not Manning or O'Reilly, but it's a good publisher. I took a long time. I thought about it and I thought, you know what, I've never written a book, but it sounds like a fun process. It was not a fun process, come to find out. It was hours and hours and hours of work. And I guess I was a glutton for punishment because when I did Vue.js in Action, this book that I'm talking to you guys about now, it was the same sort of process. And actually, it was probably a harder book to write because it was longer and Vue.js was changing. And I definitely had all the cliches that writers have. I had a little bit of writer's block in the middle. And there's definitely a higher level of code quality. I wanted to make sure the code was really precise. And we had definitely a lot of different editors that went through it. But it's a fun process. I would recommend it for people who want to get their name out there, that want to teach. I like teaching. That's a part of a passion, and I do like writing. So it kind of combined a few things. I like writing and teaching. And I can get into the more specifics if you have more specific questions, but that's kind of generally how I feel about it. And I'm really proud of it. It's nice to be finally done with it. And I think anybody that... I'll add one more thing. I think once you start putting yourself out there and start becoming a blogger or becoming a YouTuber or putting out tweets and you're talking about technical topics, the technical writing industry they are looking for writers. So there, if you have any kind of knowledge on how to write and they can see that you've written blogs in the past and that you know how to write, you'll get approached. And it's not a bad way to go, especially if you're a contractor or want to just kind of get your name out there. And I've definitely opened a lot of doors for me. I got a lot more job interviews from it. I've done some freelancing in the past because of it. So it has a lot of ancillary benefits other than the money.
Yeah, Clayton and I recently finished a book through Pact Publishing as well. And yeah, there's not a lot of money in it, and it is a lot of work, but definitely rewarding and a feeling of accomplishment to get something published and out there and available on sites like Amazon and things.
Yeah, it's very cool. Yeah, definitely. And like I said, I think Pact's a good publisher. It's it gets your name out there and it's awesome.
So back to Vue. With Vue, it's very easy to get started. Like you said, you can just basically drop a script tag on the page, or you can do the full CLI route and compile your code and all kinds of crazy stuff. How difficult is it to transition? Like if you start an app simple and then you realize that it's starting to get to a certain size, how hard is it to transition into a compiled, packaged and application?
Well, yeah, if you started off simple and just had your code in there, when you switch over to something like Vue CLI, it's pretty much the same exact syntax as you did before when you were just writing it in a single HTML file and you were putting your JavaScript in a different file. So the transition shouldn't be difficult, depending on, you'll obviously have to copy and paste all your HTML code, all your JavaScript and the Vue instance code over, and your style sheets. It shouldn't be too bad of a transition. I could see as you get more complicated, like if you started building your own webpack and your own development server, and you started putting in some features and those features don't align to what you get out of the box of Vue CLI, then you might run into an issue where you need to probably create a Vue CLI project and maybe eject it and then start fiddling with all the internals and then make sure it works exactly as you did in your previous project. But it's called the Progressive Framework for a reason. So yeah, you should be able to easily move up the chain.
Okay, so there's nothing inherent in the differences in the way that you might write a more complex application as opposed to a simple application that would really cause any huge friction in the transition?
No, I don't think so. In fact, when I teach Vue CLI, when I teach Vue on my YouTube channel, if it's just a simple concept, I'll just pop in an editor, I'll open Visual Studio Code, I'll use Emmet, you know, of course, built in to just create the scaffolding for the project real quickly, and then throw in the script tag, and then I'll show the concepts. And it works the same way if you have a larger Vue CLI project or if you're just using this single page. It's pretty simple to get up and running there. I know that in other frameworks like Angular, I don't even know how you would do that in Angular world.
Three days. If you don't use the Angular CLI, it takes 3 days to configure Webpack and everything else to get an application started. And you can't, at least with Angular 2 and above, you can't do it without having a build process. So there is no small app. If you wanted to do a to-do app, you spend 4 days making the to-do app, 3 days in setup.
Keep within the rails there.
Yeah, it feels more like Angular is the front-end SPA framework for the enterprise. React has been the go-to for people that aren't involved in those types of projects, and Vue is the up-and-comer that people are turning to because they're sick of the other two.
Yep, and don't get me wrong, if you look in any Indeed.com for any major city, tech city in the U.S., you're going to have a million React jobs, you're going to have a million Angular jobs, and there's only be a handful of Vue jobs out there. But it's still, you know, it's up-and-coming. A lot of large companies are using Vue in smaller projects. I'm testing it out. There's some companies that are just using it exclusively or switching over to Vue because it's easier. And some of them are coming from Angular 2 back to Vue because they know AngularJS is kind of like some of the components of AngularJS, but they didn't like the transition to 2.
It's really heavyweight. And even though React is supposed to be lighter weight, go ahead and make one without using the Create React app or whatever. It's the same 3 days.
Why would you do that?
I'm really attracted to the aspect of just dropping a script tag on the page and start programming.
Yeah, I haven't had any chance to do it personally, but I work for a consulting company, so we don't sort of own most of our code directly, but we've been kind of pushing people in the direction of Vue because it makes a lot of sense to be able to just sort of add in. You get that nice sort of progressive experience.
Yep, and the reactivity, the binding, the data binding is all really nice. So don't have to worry about any of that.
Well, thank you. Do you have any advice that you might be able to give to kind of people who are getting started in the industry?
Yeah, I think what you need to do is definitely get your name out there. I always say that with junior, especially junior developer jobs, is there is probably one junior dev job for every 10 jobs out there. For every 10 developers out there, it's probably one job, is what I'm trying to say. So it's pretty crowded, and anything you can do to get your name out there helps. Obviously, we talked about having a degree, like having a CS degree, but you know, you don't have to have it nowadays. So if you're not going to have a degree, you need to kind of think outside the box, like maybe creating your own blog or a YouTube channel or creating a rock solid portfolio with a number of projects that you're working on. I'm talking mostly web development here, by the way. I mean, if you're a backend developer, there's other ways to think about this. But something to catch the eye of people that are looking to hire you. Boot camps aren't a bad way to go. I know you guys had a conversation with about boot camps in a previous episode, but it definitely gets the attention. And a lot of these good boot camps have inside their programs have like a whole algorithm section. How do you act? How do you behave on interviews? How do you pass that? I mean, nowadays, if you can get into the interview, that's not even half the battle, because now you're going to be up against the take-home test gauntlet, the algorithm gauntlet, the question and answer gauntlet of some things that you probably should know, but you know you never use.
The pirates versus ninjas?
Pirates versus ninjas?
Ninja.
Ninja.
Well, it depends. Sometimes it's ninja.
One ninja, 50 pirates, never-ending battle.
Right, but if it's two ninjas,
then the pirates win.
Yeah, so I mean, there's definitely boot camp is another good way. So try to find a way to get yourself noticed, and also networking. Go to your local meetup, talk to a few people there. A lot of meetups have people that work at companies in town, and they're bound to be somebody looking for a developer. It's a pretty hot market right now. Everybody's looking for different developers. Usually, people with more experience, unfortunately. maybe try to go that way too.
Okay. And then obviously you talked about your book. You said it's going to be released here pretty soon. Do you know when and where that might be?
Yeah. So it's in the final stages of being, well, so let me preface that. It's called Vue.js in Action. It's created by, it's published by Manning. You can buy it now. It's in early access. The book will, by the time this podcast comes out, I'm sure it will be out completely. And in that case, you can buy your hardback version of the copy of it.
Okay. And that's just like Amazon or?
Yeah, it'll be on Amazon. It'll be on the Manning website as well.
Okay. And then how about people wanting to get in touch with you? I mean, obviously you mentioned your YouTube or follow you or just kind of, you mentioned your blog, your YouTube. Do you have Twitter?
Sure, yeah. I'll give out a few plugs here. So you can find me at my Twitter account at EricCH, E-R-I-K-C-H. I'm one of those guys that have K in their name instead of C. It's E-R-I-K-C-H. And also programwitheric.com is my website. And you can find my YouTube videos at eric.video.
All right, Eric. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you.
That was Eric Hanchett. Eric is a professional developer, author, blogger, YouTuber, husband, and father. He's particularly interested in Ember.js, Vue.js, and is a JavaScript superfan.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I am Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.